Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Daily Coast, The Brief, to our weekly show about politics. I'm Marcos Melitzis. I am here with Carrie Alleveld, and we are, of course, going to be talking, just like we are almost every week until the election, we're going to be talking about the November election. And predominantly today, we're going to be
talking about November.
We can just establish that baseline. The only question is, are we going to be talking about the president, the Senate, or the House? And today, we're going to be talking about the presidency. And specifically, we're going to be talking about sort of two topics, and I don't think they're related, but they're both related to the presidency. One is the effect of third-party candidates on the presidential election. Who are they going to hurt the most? And we are also going to be talking about sort of this emerging sort of trend that suggests that Republicans may be suffering from a turnout advantage, which is sort of kind of upends things. Always, historically, just traditionally, Democrats have a harder time turning out their vote. That might be changing this November. So we're going to discuss those two topics. Carrie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to go. I think I've got the points that I think
this is ready. This is your agenda, Carrie. I hope you got your point.
I know. These were your ideas,
and they were excellent ideas. So I'm excited to begin for sure.
Sometimes Marcos and I actually line up someone, and we're like, we should delve into this topic. And sometimes we like get into the Slack like 30 minutes before we go on, and we're like, what's interesting? And then it's just like we riff on that. So this is one of those what's interesting days, and we're riffing on it for 30 minutes, but we hope it'll be illuminating nonetheless. So
we know what we're talking about.
I think we do a decent job, you know. I mean, sometimes we're not campaign managers, but we have some insights, and we have some, you know, I think we have a distinctly outside the beltway, but still informed sort of commentary is what I would cast.
I think that's right. So really, let's start talking about that third party candidate, because the conventional wisdom for a long time was that RFK, Robert Kennedy Jr., conspiracy theorist, grandson of the famous president, former liberal. He was a big figure in the environmental movement for a couple of decades before sort of falling into conspiracy land, and started with his anti-vaccine movement. He really got super boosted during the COVID lockdowns because there was an audience hungry for that anti-vaccine message, and RFK sort of embraced it and his run with it. And the conventional wisdom was that his presence in the campaign, he ran as a Democrat briefly in the primary, got zero traction, dropped out, and decided to run as an independent. And the conventional wisdom was that the Kennedy name would be a drag on Biden, that just the fact that there was a Kennedy in the race would somehow hurt Biden. I'm eager to hear your take on it, Carrie, but I've always been very skeptical of that for two reasons. One is that how many people really remember freaking Kennedy anymore? I mean, this is, he was president, what, in the
60s.
So we're talking 60 years ago. It was well before my time. It was well before a lot of people's time. I don't think there's a lot of lasting, like, warm fuzzies about the Kennedy name amongst Democrats. The party has moved well past the Kennedy sort of royalty era. And I'm not just saying that sort of full of hopium, but Kennedys have run in primaries in several states, and they've been getting their butts kicked, right? There's no Kennedy boost anymore. Nobody's really clamoring for American royalty. But the second reason was precisely the reason that Donald Trump was boosting Kennedy during the pandemic, is that he appealed to QAnon adjacent conspiracy theorists. Quite frankly, I don't think there's a lot of those in the Democratic Party. I would venture that there's probably functionally none in the Democratic Party. They're all either off in la-la land or they're Republicans at this point. So his core message, which has been anti-vaccine and anti-abortion, funny enough, really does not have a place in the Democratic Party. It has warm welcome place in the Republican Party. So this sort of idea that he would draw from Biden was weird to me. And then the initial polling wasn't kind to my position. The initial polling showed Kennedy pulling more from Biden. And Carrie, we've talked about this before. My operating theory is that we really shouldn't be paying too much. We can pay attention to polls because they're fun to pay attention to. and they have some value, but I don't think they have predictive value until after the conventions. That's been our operating theory. We've been talking about this when Biden was behind. Now that he's slightly ahead, I still hold that position. People aren't not fully engaged. They're not paying attention. They really don't know what's going on. So to me, the Kennedy thing is, as soon as Democrats sort of plugged in and said, oh, this guy's a COVID conspiracy theorist and anti-abortion, you know, I'm sticking with Biden, particularly since the alternative is Trump. I mean, nobody thinks Kennedy's going to win. So that's been my operating theory this whole time. And now we have a couple of polls that show that I may be on the right track. So that's my position. Carrie, where are you on this?
Well, I'm of two minds because I never want to be too sure of myself, right? There's a piece of me that agrees with you to some extent. I mean, to your point, right? If you just look at approval ratings, RFK Jr., his approval ratings among Republicans is far higher than it is among Democrats. So I don't know if that's partly just the way it started or if, you know, some of the Democrats have been getting the word, you know, Democrats have been getting the word out.
Yeah, I don't think it started that way. Yeah, I don't think it started that way, if I recall correctly. So yeah.
That could be true. But now when you look at approval ratings, he's definitely has higher approval ratings among Republicans. That said, let me add a few points of nuance. One thing I just want to say about Kennedy's abortion stance is that he tried to moderate it. So he literally, like last year, told NBC on air, like in a live interview. So there's video footage of it that could clearly make for attack ads if the Biden campaign or his allies need it. He said that he thought that for the first 3 months, there should be access to abortion. So we're talking about 12 weeks, effectively 12 weeks, right? And then after that, he would be open to signing a national abortion ban. And then after that, like everyone, and even the reporter was like, wait a second, I thought you were for medical freedom. I thought medical freedom
like
was your whole
three
thing.
Three times. and Kennedy like, did not get the hint.
It is my thing. But in this case, right? So then his campaign came
back.
Wait,
Carrie, like, so sorry. Yeah. When you talk about medical freedom, I just want to define that for folks.
Oh, yes, please, Kennedy, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Kennedy defines medical freedom as in, I don't have to take your damn vaccine. That's his definition of medical freedom, that life-saving or, you know, disease-preventing vaccines can be rejected because, quote, freedom. So freedom. This is why, like, okay, you don't want the government to tell you to, you know, take the polio vaccine, but right. You want the government to restrict abortion? Isn't that kind of counterproductive to your idea of medical freedom? And this is where he kept like digging in.
No, he just went for it. And she was like, oh, I'm kind of surprised by that. I mean, and she was a straightforward reporter. She wasn't trying to like have a gotcha moment. She was just like legit sort of, really? And it was kind of great. So, I mean, it's good if you want to dig into that, you know, if you were a campaign operative who wanted to use that as an attack ad to get Democrats who feel like abortion is one of their most important issues off of Kennedy, that is available, right? That footage is available. Since then, his campaign has tried to back off of it and say he's not for that. He supports access to abortion, you know, blah, 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 blah. So basically,
but keep in mind, his campaign, not Kennedy himself.
His campaign. Right, exactly. I don't think there's any video of him saying, oh, yes, I'm for, you know, like it's his campaign trying to moderate this position, which just makes him look. I mean, I think some of Kennedy's appeal supposedly is this idea that he's just a straight talker and he's his own thinker and blah, 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 blah. And then his campaign is trying on this abortion issue to do, you know, to be exactly like what politicians do and what voters hate, which is, oh, he didn't really say that. That's not what he meant. And triangulating and all that stuff, right? That sort of inauthenticity that voters react very negatively to is exactly what has happened to him on the issue of abortion, which is a primary policy for a lot of Democratic voters. Okay, so I just wanted to add that little piece of nuance. Now, there's a piece of me that thinks, I'm of two minds. One is that it's totally possible that these new polls, one from NBC, which is a high quality poll, NBC News, one from Marist, which is another high quality operation. And there was a third one that came out. It might have been Quinnipiac, I'm not sure, but it was another high quality poll. And they all found that Kennedy was pulling more from Trump than he was from Joe Biden. Now, I have to say, Democrats have been very nervous about this, and their internal polling, all the reporting on their internal polling was that, you know, hey, Kennedy could be a problem for Biden. And it's clear that regardless of how this turns out, Trump needs third party candidates, right? He can't get above 47%. Yeah, so he needs third party candidates. He needs to roll the dice and take the risk of getting third party candidates in and promoting them, because he needs the chaos of that in order to win.
Yeah, he needs Biden, just simple math, he needs Biden below 47%.
Exactly, exactly, right? So Biden in 2020, everybody knows this, but Biden got 51% and he won it in 2020 with 51%. And Trump in both 2016 and 2020 never got above 47%. So that's why you take a risk like this if you're the Trump campaign in getting, you know, in having Russian propaganda prop up Jill Stein as the Green Party. And hopefully I'm sure they were extremely hopeful that no labels would be in there. But now we know that that seems to no longer be a threat. And then, you know, to have the Cornell West, the Harvard professor, be in the mix and hopefully drawing some voters away from Biden there. And then Kennedy polls higher than both Jill Stein and Cornell West in basically every poll. So he's been kind of the biggest, you know, threat. But both of these polls, and there's a third one I said, they both show that in one of them, Biden was ahead, and then he was like 5 points more ahead after you put in the third party candidates. In another one, Biden was behind by two, and then after you put in the third party candidates, plural, West, Stein, and RFK Jr., Biden pulls ahead by two. So in each of them, he gained about 4 or 5 points, right?
Mm-hmm. Biden. That's a lot.
Which is a lot. So here's where I'm of two minds, right? One of my minds says it's possible because of Biden's structural advantages. And by that, I mean, he has way more money than Trump. He has a campaign operation that is already firing on all cylinders. He has the Kennedys, who are extremely invested as a family in not having RFK Jr., you know, sink their family legacy. And you saw they came out and they did this sort of mass, endorsement of Joe Biden. Then they cut an ad saying, you know, Biden's the real heir to the Kennedy legacy. And, you know, i.e. not our brother/uncle, like that type of thing. So there's been a real coordinated effort on their part. And I'm sure as surrogates, they will go out and campaign for Biden. They already essentially are, to make sure that people know, hey, he has the Kennedy name. He doesn't have the Kennedy legacy or the backing. Right. Mm-hmm. And Biden has the resources to put together the ads if they need to do this, et cetera, right? So there seems like there's a world in which Kennedy actually potentially draws more away from Trump than he does from Biden. And then you've got Trump, who couldn't get to 47% and past 47% in the first place, in the low 40s. Right. Because if RFK is actually taking things away from him, he's suddenly dragged down to the low 40s or something in that realm. And it potentially hurts him more than it does Joe Biden. And that's essentially where Marcos is. Right.
Yeah.
I heard Joe Trippi say something and I kind of.
Can I add one more before you get to Trippi? Please. One more data point. Both Don Jr. and Trump over the last couple of days have attacked RFK, like all caps, you know, his typical screaming that any MAGA person that's thinking about supporting RFK is actually not MAGA. And so they, I believe, I don't know, maybe they're reacting to the public polls. I suspect they're reacting to their own internals that are sort of confirming the fact that RFK is actually a bigger danger to them, because they're signing I mean, Trump sounds panicked all the time because he uses all caps, but they're sounding panicked at the idea of RFK, which is sort of ironic because they're the ones that encouraged him to get in the first place. And it was people like Steve Bannon, who obviously is Trump's Svengali, who literally was the one who set up the legal structure for RFK to jump into the race. So they may have just screwed themselves. Yeah.
One of Trump's biggest donors financed, really, was one of the biggest financers of RFK's run. So, right. So
now we can get into Joe Trippi, who's been on the show. Okay. He was Howard Dean's campaign manager.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Trippi, super smart guy. About.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a veteran Democratic strategist. You know, I mean, you know, he's the guy. He's not only, you know, Howard Dean back in the day, but he's also, you know, he was the campaign manager for Doug Jones in Alabama when he won the Senate seat in a special election for 2 years or something. But, you know, and that was like, everyone was like, no way, you'll never be able to do that. Well, they did it. And, you know, Joe Trippi was the opportunistic, you know, guy, visionary who helped run that campaign. So, you know, whenever I listen to campaign managers, I do it for a reason. It's because they see things sometimes, or they see around corners sometimes that we don't, et cetera. Here's what he said effectively. He's like, I don't really trust those polls. Okay, fine. You know, you know what? Polls are right. Exactly.
Not after Labor Day, right? So
exactly. So, yeah. But right. I don't really trust those polls. But here's what else he said. He said, you know, I don't care what those polls say, because the MAGA Republicans who think highly of RFK Jr. are still going to vote for Trump, right? They're still Trump at the end of the day, even if they're like, yeah, you know, I think Kennedy's interesting. I like his anti-vax stuff, et cetera. You know, his conspiracy theories thrill me. Who knows? Whatever it is, right? But they're still Trump at the end of the day. And so he said, I still think that that Kennedy, he's not saying Biden's going to lose. He's not saying Biden can't defend against this. He's saying, I still think he poses a bigger threat to Biden, because those Trump Republicans who are, you know, maybe Kennedy curious or have high approval, high views of high opinions of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., like, they're still voting Trump. It doesn't matter. Like, they're MAGA diehards through and through. And well, where, you know, to some extent, Joe Biden's still trying to shore up his coalition. He has a lot higher ceiling, right, mm-hmm. than Trump does, but he's still trying to shore up the coalition. And so anyone who's Kennedy curious is a potential, any potential Democratic voter who's Kennedy curious is more of a threat than the MAGA Republicans who are, you know, high on Joe Kennedy. It's not Joe Kennedy. There's so many Kennedys. High on Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but will still vote for Trump. So, and that to me is like, okay, that's also plausible. There are my two minds, partly with Joe Trippi, partly with Marcos.
My sort of rebuttal, and Trippi may be right. I mean, let's all just stipulate that we really don't know, and we're playing with hypotheticals, and also with polling that, quite frankly, always overestimates the power of third party candidates. Jill Stein's at 3% in the NBC mm-hmm. poll. If she gets, you know, 0.8% in the end, you know, I would be surprised. Like, this is just traditional. That actually would be a good story. Sort of compare how much the polls say third party candidates will get to how much they actually get. Because when people walk into the polls or they have a ballot in front of them, most people don't want to throw away their vote. I mean, they went through the trouble of showing up to vote. They don't want to throw it away.
And that's the message, certainly, that Democrats and Biden are going to be
Trump
putting
too.
Forward. Yeah, both sides, right?
Yeah.
But they'll be putting that forward. But Biden has more money, a better campaign operation, more sophistication, et cetera, to work with in order to pound home the idea that a vote for RFK Jr. is really a vote for Trump. Right. And that's the idea that they will be pounding home.
So
it's true.
Yeah. My problem with Trippi is this idea that it's Trump fans that are currently supporting RFK in these polls. They're on the conservative side. I don't think there's any evidence of that. Obviously, his approval ratings amongst Republicans are like 50-60%. He's getting he's in the NBC poll, he's at 13%. Chunk of those are Democrats right now. So I would say maybe 8% of those are Republican. He's not bringing in the Trump vote. The Trump vote's a Trump vote. There are conservatives who, for a lot of reasons, are souring on Trump. Maybe his abortion position, that he's gotten all squishy. I mean, you know, he's been all over the place on abortion.
All over the place.
All over the place. So if you really sort of believe in that, then you're going to be a little squishy, and Kennedy might be an option. Also, Trump was bragging about Operation Warp Speed that helped create the vaccines in record time. He was bragging about that on the campaign trail. If you're a true sort of anti-vaxxer, and I've seen them, I see them under QAnon forums because I spend...
Yep. You spend more time there than I do. I spend a lot of time there.
They are furious anytime he talks about that. So this is a very small number of people, for sure, but it tracks that maybe 8% of Republicans might be interested in Kennedy. And I think when push comes to shove, that might shrink. But also those Democrats that are sort of curious about Kennedy, that's going to shrink. And the ratio, I suspect, will remain pro-Trump because the Democrats will come home to Biden. Most Republicans will. But those that are really, really, really all about the vaccines, Kennedy's their only play right now.
And
it's not a lot, but it might be enough in a tight election.
And to your point, I can really see, I don't think that Biden campaign will do this, but I could see a Democratic super PAC of some sort if they, through polling and focus groups and whatever, figure this out, that this is a real avenue for them. I could see them pouring a lot of money into ads that talk about how, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the real anti-vaxxer and not Trump. Trump, like having footage of Trump saying, "I got Operation Warp Speed done." And at one point suggesting, during a couple of rallies before he ended this shtick, but talking about how, you guys should really get vaccinated, and everybody booing, right?
I mean, that
footage is out there, and, it's good video. And certainly RFK is like the OG anti-vaxxer, right? And so if these people are really anti-vax, if that's really their jam and the number one issue they're voting on, I could see a Democratic super PAC pouring a lot of money into making it clear that Trump was responsible for, kicking into gear Operation Warp Speed in order to get the vaccines up to snuff. And then, also him plugging the idea of how people should get vaccinated. I could see it. I could see them doing that. That's not off the table at all.
No, and this would not be TV ads. Keep in mind that through social media, most of RFK's fans right now, because RFK doesn't have enough money to be on TV, like his fans are getting their information on social media, on the web, by Googling him, by, his Facebook page, TikTok. Those are exactly the sort of keywords you can target, right? So you can see exactly who is watching. You can even get a sense of which party they belong to. So you can target Democrats that are Kennedy curious. You can target them with, he's anti-abortion. And then you can target those conservative anti-vaxxers, because again, you could target their search string history and could say Kennedy's a true anti-vax hero. Like, so there's ways to do it in the ways that you and I will never see it because it won't be on television. And we don't frequent those keywords.
Well, you do.
Not on TikTok.
Only for good reasons, not because you're actually like, I'm never getting another vaccine in my life, damn it.
Keeping an eye on the enemy. So I think it's going to bear watching for sure. And I suspect as people become more plugged in, more aware, that disparity is going to become bigger between, Kennedy, Republican and Democratic supporters. But Kennedy's overall numbers are going to shrink as well towards as we get closer to the election. That's my operating theory. We can revisit that in a few months. So the other issue we want to talk about today is sort of this notion that it may be Republicans that may be suffering from a turnout advantage this November, which would just totally upend the conventional wisdom. It would not be the first time. We saw it in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race where Democrats came out in droves because the issue of abortion was on the ballot and Republicans did not. So already we're seeing hints of this, but Trump was not on the ballot. So the theory is, Trump's going to be on the ballot. So obviously he'll bring his people out. What are you seeing, Carrie?
Well, so this gets back to this debate of how, for decades, Democrats, if it was a high in a presidential election, if it turned out to be a high turnout presidential election, people believed that Democrats would do better, right? Because our base was lower propensity voters who wouldn't typically get to the polls as much, right?
Young people, single women, Black voters, Latina voters.
People of color, exactly.
Yeah, lowest propensity voters.
And lower socioeconomic status. So not as easy to like hit the polls on election day and, you know, all that stuff, right?
Okay. Yeah, historically, the Black vote's been strong in the last couple of cycles, not the others. The others are still young, single women, Latinos
I will say the youth vote was incredibly powerful in 2020 and the highest we've seen, I think, ever. I think they set records that year.
But by percentage of the overall, it's still pretty low.
Okay. So,
all relative.
It's all relative. So, and then the idea, of course, is that in anything that was a special election, Republicans typically did better because special elections were a situation where your high propensity voters, your suburban, you know, white folks who are maybe more politically engaged,
rural voters, because it's easy to vote because there's no lines when you go to the polling.
More conservative, they were just more likely to turn out. Okay, so what's happened over the past, like, I don't know, what is it, 3 years? You may have a better feel for this. Is that, I mean, it's certainly, it's a Trump era phenomenon, but it has been just supercharged. It is.
Yeah,
that's fair. It's 2018, the midterm.
Because it's a Trump thing. You're right. It's a Trump thing.
It's a Trump era thing. But Democrats have been consistently winning more, you know, over more suburban women, even some suburban men, some. There's still a gender gap there. And higher propensity voters, and by the way, women are higher propensity voters than men are, they've been turning out for Democrats more in all of these elections, but especially in the last 2 years, we've noted like a streak of like 30 special elections where Democrats either won when they shouldn't have won by a bigger margin than they should have won by, or lost by a much smaller margin than you would imagine. And many people have theorized that, you know, that's because in these special elections that they're getting these high, that Democrats are winning over higher propensity voters. And certainly that is a part of it, right? So I was listening to CNN analyst Harry Enten, and he was saying, look, I'm looking at polls right now and finding that likely voters, if you look at the likely voter polls, Biden's doing better in those than he's doing in the registered voter polls, right? And you can even compare some pollsters. They do both. They put out both a likely voter and a registered voter. And then Biden was doing better in the likely voter to the registered voter, et cetera. And he's not like Biden's blowing it out of the water with likely voters, but it can make a difference of, you know, 2-3 points, that type of thing. And he said, so this older idea that in a high turnout election, Democrats would benefit might not be the thing anymore. It might be that in a low turnout election, Democrats benefit and Republicans would benefit in a high turnout election because, you know, Trump is sort of has grown his pool of voters among lower propensity voters. Okay, so I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, are we really in a situation where Democrats are clearly in these special elections doing better in low turnout, right? But are we really in a situation where in high turnout, Republicans are going to benefit? Is that real? This has been my question. And I think I got one of my best answers so far as to why that might very well not be the case from our friend of the pod, Simon Rosenberg, who did a very good interview with Tim Miller of The Bulwark, right? He was the Bulwark podcast, their flagship podcast, and he was talking to Tim Miller, and they started getting into this. And first of all, I'm not going to do Simon Rosenberg justice just the way I'm not going to do Joe Trippi justice, right? But Simon Rosenberg was like, you know, just like hogwash. First of all, this idea that people are telling us that this string of special elections that Democrats have overperformed in, they've won a bunch that you would never expect et cetera, that somehow that's just like, oh, that just happens, right? It just happens. And it's not like, it's just a matter of like the right people accidentally went to the polls and the wrong people didn't, you know? He's like, that's just like no one who, only an analyst who has never worked in a campaign could think that. He's like, there's a million things that can go wrong in a campaign. And if you're turning out the right people, it's not by accident. Right. Mm-hmm. And he said, so what he said was, what's actually happening here and what could very well be at play in November is that Democrats are, this is how I called it down. Democrats could benefit from a twofer. We are truly winning more high propensity voters than we used to. That's a good thing, because no matter what happens, those voters vote, right? So you want more of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the other thing could be that Democrats are getting so many more hard dollars from these donors who used to be Republican donors now giving to Democrats, and to where this is something we can track. Democrats and Joe Biden have a huge hard dollar advantage. They've had it for several cycles now, where our candidates, our Senate candidates, our House candidates are typically outraising their opponents. It's especially true in the Senate by heaps of money. Where our campaign committees are doing better than the Republican campaigns committees. That was definitely true and at work in 2022 with Senate Democrats, that campaign arm just completely swamping Senate Republican campaign arm. And then the presidential campaigns themselves, right? These hard dollars, these are not PAC dollars. These are dollars that go specifically to the candidates. And the candidates are building, what Simon Rosenberg said is that the Democratic Party is now, by virtue of having this hard dollar advantage, building far bigger, better campaign operations. That if we've always been known for our GOTV efforts, they are getting better. They're more precise. They're more optimized. They're more efficient. They're broader, right? They go deeper, et cetera. And so what you have is a situation where we not only might win those high propensity voters, but you also have campaign operations that are doing precision and very effective get out the vote efforts. That means that we might benefit or even from a high turnout election, or we at least would hold our own and then have the advantage of the high propensity voters, right? So it'd be kind of a twofer, if you will. And that was the best. I mean, I think this is really happening. And I can give an example in a second, but I've been, you know, on a monologue for like, I don't know, 7 minutes now. So I would like to hear.
I get tired.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, maybe you're getting tired of me.
I'll say, yeah, Marcos. It's definitely the idea that we are winning, that we are becoming higher propensity voters is legit. I mean, we're seeing it in the special elections. Anybody that ignores that at their own peril. And the same people that are today are saying special elections don't matter, we're saying the same thing in the run-up to the 2022 midterm elections. When we were looking at those special elections going, there is something happening, and the November midterm elections are not going to follow historical trends. And they didn't. There was no red wave. In fact, Democrats dramatically outperformed. Now, there is no doubt that Trump can bring out low propensity voters. And all we have to do is look at the historical election results. So in 2016, Donald Trump got 63 million votes. That was 46% of the vote, 63 million votes. In 2020,
71
he got
million.
74 million votes.
74 million.
Yeah, 46.8% of the vote. Again, he didn't hit 47%, right? He got 12 million more votes. Now, those are definitely low propensity voters. Now, what was the difference? The difference is that Hillary got 66 million votes. Joe Biden got 81 million votes. So while Trump lost the popular vote in 2016 by 3 million votes, in 2020, he lost the popular vote by 7 million votes. So it is true that Trump brings out low propensity voters. Has he maxed those out? We don't know. I thought he'd maxed them out in 2016, and he dramatically brought out, I just did the math, 11 million new votes in 2020? Yeah. That's real. Are there more out there? maybe, I don't know, right? And we can't assume the answer is no, right? Because that's what got us in trouble in 2016, that right. all these voters would not turn out. But Biden also brought out a ton of new low propensity voters as well. And we're still bringing them out. So I think you may be right that, and Simon may be right, that we win either way. The margin may look different depending mm-hmm. on who turns out and votes, if our low propensity turn out and his don't. And I am seeing evidence that his low propensity voters are less likely to turn out. And there's one poll that really, it's sort of like my North Star poll so far this cycle. Mm-hmm. Because, and I don't remember who it was. It might be Magellan.
You're killing me. I want to write on it, darn it. Which one is it?
But it basically asked, are you afraid of Joe Biden or Donald Trump? And the poll results essentially came out that liberal Democratic voters were far more afraid of Donald Trump than Donald Trump voters, conservative voters, were afraid of Joe Biden. And why would they be afraid of him? They call him sleepy. Like, okay, one guy wants to end abortion rights and democracy. The other guy takes naps.
I've got good news for you. I'm pretty sure that this was the New York Times Siena poll, because I went through and looked at a ton of what was, I was trying to figure out suburban voters, what was happening with them. And let's see if I can come up with some of the points that they asked. You keep talking and I'll see if I can find them. Keep talking.
Yeah. To me, it's been one of the strategic errors of the Republicans and Donald Trump in particular, who generally has been very good with his nicknames in a Machiavellian evil sort of way. But to call Joe Biden sleepy and they're still trying to make the sleepy thing a thing. It is not very scary. Like, what's the worst case scenario if you're a conservative and Joe Biden wins re-election is, okay, you have a sleepy president. It's not really so bad. So that's the challenge that they're facing right now. They haven't created an existential threat the way that we know we have with Donald Trump.
Right. So to your point, okay, in the New York Times Siena poll that was most recently out, they asked whether Trump poses a unique threat to democracy. They asked this about both Biden and Trump. Who poses a unique threat to democracy, right? And they asked it separate. They didn't say choose one. They were saying, you know, do you think Trump poses a unique threat to democracy? And then they asked, do you think Biden poses a unique threat to democracy? So 54% of white college voters said Trump poses a unique threat to democracy. 44% of suburban voters, it was a plurality, said Trump poses a unique threat to democracy. 83% of the voters who held that view said they were voting for Biden. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea, I mean, and Biden's numbers, I don't have them right in front of me.
They were a lot lower. You're like
but
in the
they
30s.
Were a ton lower. And also he did better on the question of, is Biden good for democracy, right? Mm. Biden did better on his numbers were not nearly as bad as Trump's on posing a unique threat, and also much better on good for democracy. And so when you look at something like that, when you look at 54%, and it's not like, There's people who are unsure, right? So it's not just 54% of white college voters. It's like 54% of white college voters. And then like, say he's a unique threat, like, you know, 20% are unsure. And then an even smaller portion are like, no, right? So I'm just saying, it's not like a 55-45 situation. It's like a 55% he's a unique threat. And then like a 35%, no, he's not. And then there's like that 10% difference where I'm not a great
persuadable. Not
Who are like, I don't know. But
big threat or sleepy. Like this is where turnout is gonna be a big, big factor, because fear motivates people to turn out. And right now, Trump has not made his people afraid of Joe Biden. Now they're trying with the woke stuff, with the DEI stuff. They're trying to inject that in ways, but they can't really tie that in directly to Joe Biden, because Joe Biden is sleepy. And fundamentally, that is a ginormous strategic mistake that is going to hurt them, I think, in November, absent of everything else. Because a lot of what drives these elections and these voting choices and even who turns out to vote is vibes. And the vibes of somebody who's sleepy is just not quite that motivating.
Okay. I mean, we'll keep it.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're out of time. Definitely issues that we're gonna keep a close eye on. And again, I just want to stress that you can look at polls. Feel free to freak out if you want, but don't freak out too much because they really are still sort of forming as people's opinions are taking shape. So they're interesting in the way that the trends are moving, and they're moving in Biden's direction, just like as we've been predicting all along. But really, don't start freaking out until after Labor Day, because that's when the conventions will have happened. People are plugged in and they're starting to make up their minds. And on October, the ballots mail out in a lot of key states. So we're not even talking about all the way to November, right? So when we hit Labor Day, it's the stretch run of the election. So, but until then, we got a lot of organizing to do, get people registered to vote, educate your friends, families, coworkers, do the kind of work that you need to do to pay, sort of lay the foundation for that sprint that we're going to do starting in pretty much in August, but all the way through August through November. So that is our show for today. Carrie, thank you so much. Thanks to Walter, our producer. Thanks to Perry, who helps out behind the scenes. And thank you, our viewer, listener, reader, for everything that you do for our democracy. So glad to have you in this fight. Everything's at stake. The most important election of our lifetime, just like it has been the last few cycles. It's exhausting, I know, but Donald Trump is Donald Trump. So we're going to do what we need to do, and we're going to win because of efforts of people like you and your activist colleagues. So thank you for everything you do. Love you all. Catch you all next week. Bye-bye.